thank you so much.
My neighbor. I got plenty of neighbors over there.
WPFW Washington.
Afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. As always, thank you so much for your support, both for your listenership, for your donations, and in general for making sure that this wonderful outlet that we have known as WPFW is strong and is able to broadcast you all of the good shows that we have every day of the week, every day of the year. And I need to remind you that we are in our pledge drive, and I need your support this afternoon. I've got $500 left to raise. I think we can do that. If you are moved to make a donation, if this show reflects your values, if you ever found value in hearing some of the programming that we provide specifically on this show or in general in WPFW, give us a call, 202-588-9739, 800-222-9739 if you're out of the area. Or you can always go on our website, wpfwfm.org, to make that donation. With that said, I want to invite, I want to welcome, our guests for this afternoon. And we may have a couple of more folks joining us as the hour progresses. But I want to welcome Commissioner Robbie Woodland from HC, also Ms. Coquinda, and I think we just were joined by Davina, Ms. Davina. They are all either residents or have been fighting a good fight for what happened with the Talbert Street condos, and we'll get into that a little bit more, but I want to say welcome and ask folks to individually introduce yourself. Please go right ahead.
Okay, I see my name listed here first, maybe just because it's connected from my end. But my name is Coquinda Chambers, and I am one of the Talbert Street homeowners. And I am a business owner. I work for the D.C. government, particularly serving elementary school children, special needs children. Again, a business owner of my practice in as a licensed naturopathic physician. And I look forward to sharing my story.
Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Davina, if you're able to introduce yourself, please go right ahead.
Sorry, I was trying to unmute myself. Hi, I am Ms. Callahan. I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I have been in the DC area for over 10 years.
Thank you so much. Commissioner Woodland?
Oh, thank you. I had to unmute myself. My name is Commissioner Robbie Woodland. I am a Ward 8 8C elected official, and I am a three-term commissioner. I am also a community advocate with over 25 years of service.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Thomas, I think that's the first name.
Oh, hi, it's Ms. Thomas.
Ms. Thomas, thank you.
It's Shannon. I'm actually one of the residents of Talbert Street, and I'm here in support and to also chime in or listen in as you guys do your podcast.
Thank you so much. Well, folks, as you have heard them allude to, they are all, save Commissioner Woodland, all former owners at the Talbert Street condos, which has had some serious issues over the past couple of years with, you know, really poor living conditions, but also very little in the way of support as a result of these conditions. And I'll invite, you know, all of the residents to talk a little bit about what happened there with at Talbert Street.
I'll go ahead and start and open us up, and I have the support of the other ladies who can chime in with anything that I may miss. But again, this is Coquinda, and I did not mention I am also a third generation Washingtonian. I was born and raised in Ward 7, but spent a lot of my time also in Ward 8, my work life and teenage life. One of my first jobs through the summer youth program. So longtime resident of the city, and I have seen it change with each head of, you know, from the executive offices, all of the various mayors in those offices at that time. So the Talbert Street community, we are a community predominantly of Black American women. We're a community of 46 families. And so 46 families were displaced year 2021. We received an emergency evacuation notice in August of 2021. And we had 2 weeks to evacuate our units. Many of us had to organize and arrange and figure out where we were going to go because, you know, we had properties that in the space that allotted and accommodated our families. And again, as I mentioned earlier on during our introductions, I'm a business owner. So I had to be signed in and signed up and bought into Mayor Bowser's first time home buyers program, of which many of us, all of us benefited from in various ways based on how that program is presented. And a great many of us are DC government workers or federal workers. And so that means that we are taxpayer. You know, we're also taxpayers, and we thought that we were going to benefit from a program that we actually pay into. And so I think that that's they're very important to stress because, you know, we don't want it to ever appear as if we signed up for some sort of handout, because that's not what it was. There have been many people, even district officials, who have benefited from the first time home buyers program. And so, like every other American, we wanted to have a part of that dream and create generational wealth for our families and, you know, have a place that we could call home. And it was our first home. And unfortunately, the district disappointed us in that program by lack of oversight and negligence of is that's how I see it. And I believe many of my neighbors feel the same way, although they have been able to evade liability through this new legislation that the Office of Attorney General, I believe spearheaded by the executive office under the direction of Mayor Muriel Bowser, to not, you know, be liable under the Consumer Protections Act, that was overturned. And so we now are not able to go after the city for something that was very much their responsibility, and they had every hand and every part of building this property. So through permits, through inspection, through selection of the builders, all of this has to go through and is run by DCRA, Department of Housing and Community Development, DHCD, and, you know, the various other agencies that had their hand in the downfall of this property. So we literally still have ownership rights to a property that we no longer can live in. And we have been displaced, like I said, since 2021. And so we're approaching 4 years, and a handful of homeowners have been able to move forward with new housing. But now the city is presenting a permanent rental solution, which I totally don't agree with, because we were not displaced from rental properties. We were homeowners, and we were displaced from homes that we signed up to purchase and that we had purchased. And we're in the process of, you know, we were making mortgage payments. And so in my mind and in my opinion, we should be restored back to home ownership. That should be the option and the only option. And so the district all along, they have, because this has been such a circumstance that has upended our lives in many ways, you know, our home lives. And although we push forth because we are resilient and, you know, they have covered rental assistance for us. But there hasn't been any real tangible solution to bring a resolve to restore us back to home ownership. And so after 3 years, this past October, HPAP was extended to us, but under the condition that we hand over our deeds to the Talbot Street properties. And in many instances, because of the new housing market, when we purchased in 2017 and 2018, the housing market has doubled or tripled what we purchased our homes for. And so while the HPAP maximum has increased, many have not been able to benefit from HPAP for various reasons, or are still unable to afford housing in the new market because there is a need for gap funding. And so Robert White's office, that is the chair of housing for the city council, he and our council member at the time, Trayon White, they were very active in getting us some assistance and resources and have been very hands-on all along. But again, as mentioned, the city council voted against this and, you know, voted for that consumer protection to protect the city. And they did not care. It was more about a policy and less about the compassion of people who ended up in this situation at no fault of our own. So we currently have a legislation, I think, that is being worked on and to try to help us move forward. But again, as of the 31st, rental assistance, the 31st of January, rental assistance discontinued for us, with more than 90% of our community left without an option, or forced to have to either stay with family or go rent. And, you know, one of the other options that they've offered DHCD in particular, outside of the HPAP, is, again, as I mentioned earlier, permanent rental assistance, which doesn't even cover the rent for a 12-month period, equivalent to the size of homes that we had at Talbot Street. So we are still kind of left at a limbo, and it's not okay. And the city is, I believe, they're trying to push that. They've provided us all of these opportunities and means of assistance through rental options. But again, rental assistance and rental coverage, while they could have made decisions and included us in their budgets for at least 3 of these 4 years, and that was never prioritized, and it's not okay. I'll give someone else a chance to talk, because I can go on and on about this. This is great.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. And just to summarize, you know, so what happened was, as I understand it, was majority African-American women, Black women, were encouraged through the city, through first-time home buyer program, through a bunch of other means, were encouraged to buy homes, which is, you know, for a lot of people, the so-called American dream. They did so, And then the conditions were so bad there, you all were forced out. And then the city has enacted legislation to essentially wash their hands of any of that responsibility. And you all are now encouraged to be renters. And that's the only kind of support you seem to be getting, instead of finding ways to continue to be homeowners, which is increasingly difficult because every year, every month, homes and that market gets increasingly expensive. And as you said, Ms. Coquinda, I'd love to invite a couple of the other former homeowners, or actually you all are current homeowners, you just don't have your homes, to share a little bit about their stories and how this affected you all.
Yeah, so I'll say a little bit more about my situation, how it has personally affected me. So again, I am also born and raised in Washington, D.C., Washingtonian. I purchased my home in 2017. It was fairly after I had finished my master's degree, and I decided to return home and do the work that I had went to school for in my own city. So I am a social worker again. So I started off in a nonprofit agency, and then I went to D.C. government doing child and family services, which is CPS. And I'm now in the school system. So yes, I had just learned that I was also expecting my first child. I am also a first generation homeowner as well. Bought my home in 2017. And like Coquinda said, in 2021, we had received evacuation notice. Prior to receiving our evacuation notice, there were notices of some cracks, or cracks that they consider normal that we were telling them that were not normal. There were concerns with our sewer, just overall issues around the entire property. So outside of our property, you can see large cracks from one brick going to the next brick. So from one homeowner home to the next homeowner home, where we were telling them, hey, these are our concerns. And they kept saying, no, this is normal tear. This is normal tear. We were reaching out to government officials and so forth before they gave us the evacuation notice. And they continued to sweep it under the rug. Eventually, they learned, once we kind of pushed for our report to be done in terms of like an engineer report, they learned that the issues was bigger than what they wanted to admit to. So that is when we got the evacuation notice. So for me, again, like Coquinda said, like there's family support, but you know, of course, when you enter the process of being a homeowner, it doesn't feel good to have to go stay with someone else or have to figure it out by living with someone else, especially as a first-time mom. My daughter was excited to have her own room. That was the place that we thought we was going to make forever memories. And to have to get up and go and find somewhere that's reasonable in terms of my workspace and her school schedule and so forth, definitely was stressful, to the point where I know personally for myself, I definitely had to seek some type of mental health support, where I was diagnosed at one point with anxiety and depression. So it definitely was taking a toll on my mental space, not to mention a financial piece to that as well. Coquinda said, it was a lot to think, again, like you said, that we were entering this American dream process, and to be told that no, you have to leave these homes that you thought was going to be your forever homes, that you worked hard to enter, whether it was get your credit straight, save this X amount of money, or do whatever it is that you had to do to achieve the American dream, but to have it quickly taken away from you at no fault of your own, is definitely a hard pill to swallow.
That's right. No, well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I mean, that is just infuriating and so sad to hear. You know, like you said, you know, we were thinking we're going into our forever homes, right? We were thinking we were doing what we need to do, especially as longtime district residents, you know, that have been, some of y'all been here for generations, and then to have almost the literal rug pulled from under you is just so terrible. And I would love to hear some more stories, but I do need to take just a little couple of minutes to remind folks that we are in the middle of a drive. I've got a goal of $500 today. And as you are listening to these stories, this is the goal of this radio program, is to really bring you directly the voices of what's happening here in this city, what's happening on Talbert Street very specifically, right? But what's happening with our city government as well, when they take actions that don't benefit district residents. So our goal really is to create this platform, to have it be a megaphone, to hopefully increase the reach of their stories and their concerns, and to hopefully find some resolution, right? We want to create this space because we know decision makers are listening. We know that other people who may be able to support folks going through these type of issues and the other issues that we cover are listening, and create those connections, and once again, to create this platform so folks can share their stories, because what's happening is we are not hearing directly enough from people directly impacted by living, you know, poor living conditions, by negligent landlords and developers, by decisions made by elected officials that don't benefit their residents. So if you are able to, if you're moved to do so, as I mentioned, I've got a goal of $500 to raise this afternoon. I know we can do that. With your help, with your support, we can continue providing this type of platform and programming, you know, so folks are able to really share what is actually happening on the streets. If you can do so, please give us a call, 202-588-9739. We can also be reached at 1-800-222-9739, or you can always go to wpfwfm.org. Consider becoming a sustainer. We get credit for the aggregate amount that you are committing to. So, for example, if you pledge to donate $10 a month, we'll get a credit for $120, right? So consider doing that or making a one-time donation. Those don't hurt either. So please, if you can, we really do need your support. We need to ensure that taking action continues to create this platform, but also this wonderful resource that we have, WPFW, is around for a very long time. 202-588-9739 or WPFWFM.org to make your secure online donation. With that said, I'd love to hear more from some of the other homeowners that were affected by what happened there on Talbert Street. And Commissioner Robbie, I'd love to hear from you as well, you know, around your role in supporting these folks in your area of town. So please, if anybody is moved to share us their story, please feel free to go ahead and do so.
Hi, I would chime in. I'm a third generation Washingtonian. I prided myself on never renting and purchasing this home for myself and my son, and to be uprooted and to provide him or be put in a place where I have instability. It has been very tactful, very stressful. I never wanted personally as a parent to be that parent that was constantly moving, waiting for the bottom to fall out. He took his first steps in his room on Talbert Street. He even to this day at 8 years old, and I say that age because it reminds me of how long we've been in this situation, from him taking his first steps in that bedroom to now he's 8, that we have kind of been in this dryer of sorts of where we're just being bounced around and we haven't been giving a clear path of like moving forward. To this day, when we drive past that location, he inquires or asks about the room that he had at that house. And for a parent, that's a gut punch every time. And you know, even if people aren't going to consider the adults that are involved in a situation, I ask them to consider the children that have been impacted by this miscarriage of a bad business deal of a property that was built in the city. And those of us that have, most of the women that live at that residence were entrepreneurs or involved or engaged in things outside of the scope of what they do day to day. And even the momentum of just focusing on your craft or your work or your outer workings are impacted by you having to constantly be tactful, sending emails, following up. You know, this has been like a secondary job trying to get the city to be on the same page or to follow up, to respond, to give us answers. And we just want to be free from this purgatory of sorts. And I feel like we did everything that we were told to do. And even till this day, we all have this property on our credit. And the way that is documented and notated, it's going to be on our credit for years to come. And that needs to be rectified and addressed. And I'll take this moment to also shout out NACA for doing the work to reach out to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to have that first conversation with them to even relinquish us of our mortgages so we can create a path forward that was not done by the city, that was not done on behalf of the city. And that first conversation should have started with them. So, you know, just to kind of give you some clarity of the magnitude of what we're dealing with, this can impact us for years to come, and we just want to be free from it. And that's all I have to share.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Commissioner Woodland, what has been your role? You know, as you mentioned when you introduced yourself, you're an elected official, you're, you know, an advocate for folks. What has been your role here? Especially when, you know, you could argue a large percentage, at least of the DC Council, kind of backed up off this, right? Like they initially, I would imagine, you know, were patting themselves on the back. We did this great thing as a district, as a city. But then when you know the disrepair and the fallout happened, they really did they literally passed emergency legislation to back off you know any liability that they may have. It was the argument, I believe. But you are somebody that's been involved in trying to support this community. Can you talk a little bit about what you've been working with them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So my goal was just to get more information out about this. It was quietly kept. It wasn't talked about in our ward. A lot of us didn't know that this was happening. I saw a post on Instagram of Councilmember Robert White, and his Instagram post was, you know, about the disappointment in DC Council that they went against their own DC residents. So they did have a vote for all of this. All of the council members agreed to do this to these residents, with the exception of Robert White and Trayon White. Those were the only two council members that did not agree to move forward in this way with them. So I think it's important to note, and I want to be very intentional with my wording, that this was a collusion. This was a huge misuse of power. So right before Thanksgiving, a judge ruled that BC government can be listed as a merchant. And the response to that ruling was for the mayor of our city to, in collusion with the Office of the Attorney General, and then the council members, to pass an emergency act called the Consumer Protection Clarification Emergency Amendment Act of 2024, where they made this act retroactive. So they backdated it years before these homes were even purchased, so that they wouldn't have to compensate these families for what they went through. And I think it's really important to note that, you know, these families, these are educated women. You do have some men also. These are Howard graduates and Harvard graduates. These are DC government employees, federal government employees. One of the young ladies going through this is a fellow commissioner of mine as well. You know, these are educated women. They did what they were supposed to do. They utilized the services provided to the District of Columbia. So for them to turn against their own residents in this way, it just makes us feel very hopeless about the state of our city at this moment, right? And then to further add, okay, so let me back up just a little bit. Last year, the mayor made a statement in regards to ERAP and made the statement that people was misusing the website, the ERAP platform, to constantly apply for rental assistance. And it was just putting their accounts in an automatic stay, and that this system was being abused. Well, not so, because from talking with the residents, I found out that the ERAP program, the monies from the ERAP program, was being used to house them also. So if you're using the ERAP money for 3 years, then it wouldn't be money left. So the DC residents were not abusing the system. You were using the money to help with the Talbot Street residents, right? And then if you could provide this type of service for 3 years, you could have just went on and settled with them and made them whole. You have to remember that some of these residents were not able to get loan forgiveness. And like she just stated, their credit is ruined because of this. So our goal here, my goal here, is to spread the word. I did reach out to Congress, and I did send over an email with this emergency legislation and my opinion of what was being done here in the District of Columbia against our own residents. And I just hope that, you know, it's to the tune of about between $4 to $6 million that was spent when you could have just settled with these residents. And they can't sue the company, the builders who built this. They didn't have the expertise to build this, and the district allowed them to self-inspect instead of having District of Columbia inspectors go and do this. And I feel like it's important to mention too that these homes, they are sliding down a hill. They're sliding down a hill. And to add more anguish to these residents, if they decide to utilize this program again, there is language in their documentation that says that they have to forfeit their claim to compensation, and then they have to surrender their deeds to DC government. And then when they refuse to do these things, they're now being threatened with having a water lien on their credit. Some of them are paying mortgages for places that they can no longer live in. And now you have a bunch of them that's facing homelessness and is homeless right now. So the DC government, they failed our residents. And it just goes to show you how the DC government think about and our elected officials think about our Ward 8 residents. Ward 8 residents are always at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to getting anything done in our ward. When it comes to taking us seriously, they don't consider us human. That's my opinion. We are always living in modern day decrepitude. And what is happening to us is intercolonialism at best. You know, it's intercolonialism. This is happening to us by our own government. And it's not fair. This is unfair treatment. This is a complete misuse of power. So that's my opinion of the whole thing. Thank you.
No, thank you. And I concur with you and what you're thinking, because we continue to see these issues primarily play out, you know, just in an imbalanced way in Ward 8, where we see Ward 8 residents not receiving the same services and being, to a large extent, sacrificed, right? In a sense, their well-being, their homes, their family life, their health is being put, being made something super negative that really is hurting Ward 8 residents instead of helping folks that are really in need, but also folks that are doing things for themselves, right? This wasn't folks who, you know, were asking for some sort of handout, or these are folks who took the initiative to say, I want to be a homeowner and I'm going to, you know, do what I need to do. And when they did so, you know, they were faced with a nightmare.
And this is the reason why our home rule is under threat right now. This is the reason why Republicans have gotten together to create the Bowser Act. This is the reason why they are trying to take away our governance and our liberties here in the District of Columbia. Because you have so many individuals, when they get into office, they run and they convince the residents of the District of Columbia that they have their best interests in heart. But then once they take their seats, they have their own agendas and their own agendas play out. This is a huge misuse of power. This is collusion. This is DC government going against its residents because they fail to want to make them whole again. And it's not right, and it shouldn't be allowed. I reported this to the Department of Justice. I reported this to BEGA, and I was told, oh no, it's nothing that we can do about this from Department of Justice. I was told by BEGA, oh, this is outside of our authority. And then I asked, well, whose authority is it? Because the mayor has went against her own DC residents. She does not have our interest in mind. The only time I have ever seen the mayor here in Ward 8 was when it was time for her to be reelected. And that was it. Other than that, she don't want to answer questions from residents here in Ward 8. She refuses to respond to email. Her team doesn't get back to any of us as commissioners. It's a huge disappointment. She no longer needs to be the mayor of the District of Columbia.
Thank you for that. And one follow-up question on this is which I'm keep asking myself as I was doing my own little research to prepare for the show today, is like, what has happened with the developers, right? Like, what are they? Did they just kind of get away with this? Like, what?
They filed bankruptcy.
Wow.
They filed bankruptcy. And I believe that these residents should sue them individually.
That's right. I saw a couple, when I asked that question, I saw a couple of the residents come off mute. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, yes, they did file for bankruptcy, and they actually one of the developer, his wife is featured a lot on Fox 5, where they're making outside videos and continuing to
a production company.
Yeah, to take expensive trips. All they did was bankrupt and rename themselves.
And they're still building, by the way, in the district. So they've built a property, at least one that I'm aware of, after our property was built. So I don't know how frequently they get work, but they definitely are still under a new name, though. They're still builders in the city. And that's the point that I was trying to make about the oversight from the executive and all of the DC government agencies that are responsible for building in the city. I mentioned DCRA, DHCD, who provides the loans for the first-time homebuyers program. Like, there is not enough monitoring, investigation, inspection, oversight. It's a huge lack of that. And that's a problem.
If you go back to our council hearing, when we had it with DC Council, with Phil Middleton, Trayon, and excuse me, Robert White. If you look at the notes or play back the transcripts of that meeting, it was found out or determined upon that investigation that they allowed the developer to self-certify. So no one checked the work, and they gave them a certificate of occupancy. And last that we knew of, with the OAG office, they were supposed to be doing their own independent investigation. And last we heard, the young man that was on our case no longer worked for the Attorney General's office. We never got any follow-up on who was now taking over or working on that. And even some of the council members, pending the FOIA Act, we saw that this developer provided donations for some of these people's campaigns. So, you know, it's a lot of intermingling, intertwining, interlinking, and, you know, we are dumbfounded as to why these people have not been held accountable. I know that they did have and host an office in Georgetown, and they are not hard to find. So, yeah, that's where we've been left off with it, with no follow-up.
Wow.
And also, I think it's important to say this too. I would encourage your listeners, if you go to the DC Council website and you look at some of these videos in regards to the Talbot Street residents, you see that the council members, they openly say that you all got a raw deal. Like, this was a raw deal. We're so sorry that this happened to you. They admit that everything was wrong. And at the same time, they turned around and stabbed the residents in the back. Okay, when you go on to Brian Schwab's Instagram account, and when he's talking about Amazon, he makes a specific statement about, we are going to protect our DC residents. We are going to fight for our DC residents. And I made a comment into that. Well, what about the ones from Talbot Street? Mm-hmm. Because you did not protect them. You all went against them, and there's been nothing. So these are, in my opinion, these are a bunch of liars. They are a bunch of liars. Their interest is only in the economy of the District of Columbia. They have no interest in the support of DC residents. None whatsoever. They talk to these residents as if they are less than whole. The agencies that have been communicating with them, especially DCHD, when they have been communicating with these residents, it has been very aggressive. The letters that have been sent has been very aggressive, very demeaning, and they have no empathy or sympathy for what these families have went through. And it's just not right. And I would encourage all of your listeners, if they are DC residents, do not elect these people to come back into office. We want to have people who care about DC residents. It is a crime-ridden city. There is all kinds of fraud and corruption that is happening here. And then you fail to protect your residents. This is not what I signed up to live in. And I am a born DC resident. And this is not what I signed up to live in. This is not living. This is detriment. Detriment and intercolonialism.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I'm sorry to just have to break, because I have to take another quick little break to encourage folks to make donations. But I do want to follow up with a theme that I see, especially in the housing work that I do in general. But let me remind folks that we are in the middle of our drive, and I do need your help. We are trying to raise $500, and we've only got a little bit over 15 minutes to do so. So I'd really appreciate some support. As you've been listening, these are folks who are experiencing, you know, some very adverse issues, almost forced upon them. But they are still here raising their voices, pushing back, making sure that you, other district residents, are aware of what's happening and who are the players that are making this happen or that are not taking action to help and support them. So please, we encourage you, if you find value in this type of programming, in this platform, to make a donation. We need to raise, once again, $500. I could really use your support. Please give us a call, 202-588-9739. You can always go on our website, which is wpfwfm.org, to make your online donation. We really do need to ensure that WPFW stays as strong as ever so we can continue bringing you this platform, so we can continue creating this platform, this microphone, megaphone, to amplify the stories and the voices of district residents who are saying something is wrong and we need to do something about it. So please, if you can, one last time, 202-588-9739, or you can always go on our website to wpfwfm.org to make your secure online donation. I hope to thank some folks before we have to wrap up here. I want to thank all of you, first of all, for sharing your stories and for the work that you're doing, not only, you know, on advocacy on your own behalf, but, you know, you are sounding an alarm that something is wrong here in a city that is not taking care of its residents. I see a theme here where those who have money, those who have the political relationships, are able to get around issues, right? So if, you know, we built something that fell apart, we're going to file bankruptcy, but guess what? You know, we did it through an LLC or something, so we're going to be able, we're going to be all right because we've got the relationships and the money to continue doing what we do. And we see that in rental housing and obviously in what's happening here with the folks at the Talbert Street community. So, you know, I think it is very important for us to heed the words of these very, very strong women. Let's underscore that, that are saying, you know, we need help and we've been, a wrong has been done to us through no fault of our own. And we are asking for help. We're not asking for our lives to be made worse, because it's not only the fact that they've had to move, there's so many after effects of this, them being displaced from their community. I want to make sure that we save some time to talk about, you know, what is next? What do we hope happens? What sort of support do you need from your neighbors here in the district?
Yes.
What call are we putting towards those decision makers? Because we do need to come together and make sure that, you know, something positive happens to alleviate all this stress and damage that's been caused for this community. So please.
Well, right now we're putting out a call to action. We're putting out a call for support from other homeowners, because you have to keep in mind that this could be you. There are new buildings, there are new homes that are being built in the District of Columbia all of the time. For years, the District of Columbia has been having a facelift of sorts, right? And this could be you. You could purchase a home and find yourself in this situation. So we want to get support from the other homeowners. We're going to create a petition on change.org called 46 Voices for Justice. The 46 Voices for Justice, and this is going to be for the Talbot Street residents. We are also going to be out and about in Ward 8, going door to door, being more grassroots with the homeowners, asking them to sign a petition to support these residents, because we need to take this to our elected officials in Congress. We need to take this to the Senate. We need to move forward. So if this temporary law becomes a permanent law, is going to have to go to Congress. It's going to have to go to the House in order to get passed. And what we want to do is stop it when it gets there. So we're going to need the support of all of the homeowners, because it can be you. And I'm willing to support any homeowners that is currently going through any other situations like the ones on Talbot Street. I support anything that's happening in our ward where the residents are being slighted and gone against. So it's important. Change.org. We're going to create that today for 46 Voices for Justice. We appreciate everyone to come and please sign that petition and be on the lookout for us, because we're going to be going door to door. We're getting really grassroots with this thing. We're trying to prepare for when this law goes to Congress and to the House to become permanent. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I invite any of the community members at Talbert Street, just, you know, let us know what support do you need, and personally, where do you see this going in the future?
I think the support we also need, write your local officials, your local council members, and ask them, why is this miscarriage of justice happening and why they haven't given us a means to move on? Really force them to give you an answer around it, because there needs to be a level of accountability based on it. You know, I think a lot of people don't know or aren't aware, or when I share my stories, I hear about other people in the same predicament, and that's very alarming. And specifically when it comes to new developments and housing in DC, you know, maybe engage with Robert White's office to support legislation or actions that will protect homeowners of the district so that this does not happen again, or hold DLB accountable for inspecting the work and actually making sure that they vet these contractors that come into our city to build new development. So I feel like those are things we need as well, because we also want to make sure nobody else is ever in this predicament where you achieve the American dream of getting a new home. And then after 4 years, you're told that you have to do an emergency evacuation 2 weeks before school starts, and I'll land there.
Wow. Thank you so much. Anybody else as we close here?
And we also want to thank Robert White, because Robert White and his office, they have been unmatched when it comes to really trying to get this word out here about what's going on and really defending these residents. And he's trying to put legislation together that will support them instead of go against them. So we really appreciate Robert White and his office for that. We do appreciate Trayon White for voting no also when it comes to the treatment of these residents. So I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you.
And Caitlin in his office as well. She's been phenomenal and very empathetic to our cries.
And I know Caitlin listens, so shout out Caitlin. Hopefully the council member listens to and other council members. We've got just about 3 minutes left. Any closing words, as we wrap up the show, from anybody else?
I would quickly want to say thank you to Robert White for being so bold to make that video. That video spearheaded a lot of people's attention, and I'm thankful that he took time out to do so.
Yeah. And I'd like to say thank you first to Shannon for bringing out DOB. I'd mentioned DCRA and DHCD. Definitely DOB is another agency that needs to be mentioned regarding the situation. And I also want to thank the WPFW Radio for having us, for caring enough to allow us to tell our story. And also to Commissioner Robbie Woodland, we appreciate your advocacy. We appreciate you stepping in so quickly and even on a short notice, and speaking as a very strong advocate on behalf of our community, because we need all the voices and all of the work anybody has to offer to help and assist us through this process. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I want to thank you all, because as I said earlier, I think this is an issue that has, obviously affected you all directly, but this is this is happening in the city to a lot of people, where our government is not doing right by its people, is siding with big money interest, and is not and is actually working against its own people, in this sense where emergency legislation was enacted to essentially cover the city's backside and wash their hands of any liability they may have when they played such a role in what happened at Talbert Street. So I want to thank you all for being so brave and strong, and know that you have support here from Empower DC, from WPFW. We encourage you, invite you to come back and share your story. Hopefully there'll be better news to share as the year progresses. Want to thank you and encourage you to keep the fight going.
Can I add one more thing? To all of the listeners, especially the DC residents, we are going to go through a lot. We have to get prepared. There's a lot coming our way. We have to get prepared for that. But together we rise and divided we fall has never been a more truer statement. We have to stick together. Doesn't matter what your color is. It doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is. We need to stick together. We are all family in this walk.
Thank you so much. And once again, thank you all so much. We'll hope to have you with us in the near future. Let me remind folks that we didn't get a donation during this hour, but it's never too late. Please give us a call, 202-588-9739, WPFWFM.org. I'd love to say at least we got something on the board, y'all.
I'm going to be donating.
Okay, hey, there we go.
I'm going to be donating. I'm going to call the number that you put out as soon as I get off the
phone. But once again, thank you all so much. I mean, I know this is hard to share your stories, to do this work. But we thank you, and our city's going to be better for it. So thank you all so much. We will catch you next Tuesday. Stay tuned. You've got the news in just a couple of minutes, and then you've got capitalism, race, and democracy right after. Peace, everyone. We will catch you next Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Last week, a six-week ceasefire went into effect between Hamas and Israel, wherein Hamas agreed to release 33 hostages in exchange for almost 2,000 Palestinian prisoners. So far, 16 out of the 33 hostages have been freed by Hamas, and 656 Palestinian prisoners have been released by Israel. But things have come to a standstill for the moment, as Hamas said it would postpone the next hostage release scheduled for this Saturday until further notice, after accusing Israel of violating the ceasefire agreement. After Hamas's announcement yesterday, President Trump, who is meeting with King Abdullah II of Jordan today, urged Israel to cancel its ceasefire deal with Hamas and let the chips fall where they may, so to speak, if Hamas does not return hostages still being held in Gaza by noon this Saturday. Today, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu followed up those sentiments by saying in a statement, and I quote, "If Hamas does not return our hostages by Saturday noon, the ceasefire will end, and the Israel Defense Forces, or IDF, will return to intense fighting until Hamas is completely defeated," end quote. 27 Christian and Jewish groups representing millions of Americans filed a federal court lawsuit today challenging the president's order that gives immigration agents more freedom to make arrests at houses of worship. The lawsuit, filed in U.S. District Court in Washington, contends that the new policy is spreading fear of raids, thus decreasing attendance at worship services and other valuable church programs. The lawsuit says the result infringes on all the group's religious freedom, specifically their ability to minister to migrants, including those who are in the United States illegally. One religious leader, Reverend Sean Rowe, the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, said, and I quote, "We cannot worship freely if some of us are living in fear. By joining this lawsuit, we're seeking the ability to gather and fully practice our faith, to follow Jesus' command to love our neighbors as ourselves," end quote. The Trump administration did not immediately respond to this new lawsuit, but a memorandum filed on Friday by the Department of Justice opposing a previous lawsuit may have a bearing on it. That memorandum states that the plaintiff's request to block the new enforcement policy is based on speculation of hypothetical future harm and thus is insufficient grounds for issuing an injunction. Traditionally, flu season peaks around February, and according to data from the CDC, flu season in the United States is the most intense it's been in at least 15 years. One indicator of flu activity is the percentage of doctor's office visits driven by flu-like symptoms. Last week, that number was clearly higher than the peak of any winter flu season since 2009 to 2010. Overall, 43 states reported high or very high flu activity last week. Flu was most intense in the South, Southwest, and Western states. So far this season, the CDC estimates that there have been at least 24 million flu illnesses, 310,000 hospitalizations, and 13,000 deaths, including at least 57 children. In the D.C. area, the National Weather Service issued a winter storm warning for most of the D.C. area today that began at 1 p.m. this afternoon and will last until 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Most of the area can expect between 1 and 2 inches of snow to accumulate per hour before snowfall rates increase later in the afternoon. The National Weather Service also said that snow could accumulate up to 7 inches in areas south of Interstate 66. Temperatures will peak in the mid to upper 30s with at least 5 miles per hour winds. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser's office declared a snow emergency for 6:30 this evening through at least the end of the day on Wednesday. This means that any motorists who are parked on snow emergency routes face being towed. In today's weather, it's currently about 36 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe,